So yes, I call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order, and there is a quorum present. Vice Chair Hill, would you please motion the minutes from Tuesday, March 19th for approval? Thank you. Any discussion of the minutes from Tuesday, March 19th? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Our minutes are approved. All right. So members, yesterday we brought forward the education policy bill to be introduced as the DE2 amendment and its provisions. Today we will hear public testimony on the amendment and open the committee floor to member discussion, but no formal action will be taken today. And then we hope that we do good work today, and that tomorrow that we can finish as expediently as possible. Also, I think people are aware that our meeting was moved up an hour tomorrow to 5 o'clock. We were able to get that started a little bit earlier, and then we can get on our way on Thursday evening. All right, with that, to the discussion and feedback on House File 3782. Our first testifier is Commissioner Willie Jett, Commissioner of the Department of Education. Thank you, Commissioner Jett, for being with us today.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Willie Jett, and I serve as the Commissioner of Education. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on the House's Education Policy Omnibus Bill today. I'll start my remarks by thanking you, Chair Pryor, and the committee for including much of the Governor's Education Policy Bill in this omnibus. I believe the proposals we have put forward provide the necessary technical updates, protections, and support that our students and school communities need to succeed. From maintaining statutory integrity in such important statutes like online instruction, to updating the teacher licensure statutes, to maintaining high quality educators for our students receiving special education services. This bill follows through on our commitments to our English learner students and their families by asking our districts and schools to make publicly available a language access plan, so families are never in doubt about their rights and procedures for interpretation in our schools. This bill also builds off work from last year for charter schools by increasing accountability, providing stability for students and families attending charter schools, and responsible stewardship of public dollars. As you may know, MDE has reopened the process for districts to apply for a 4-day school week model, and we appreciate Representative Baker's advocacy in this space. While MDE continues to believe that the application and approval processes are important steps in this shift, we welcome the conversation and the clear direction on this option for districts. So again, I appreciate the committee's time, and I look forward to our continued partnership to ensure our schools provide a safe and healthy and supporting teaching and learning environment for our students. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I do want to also thank you for your work with the committee this year. When we were first introduced, I was so impressed with your background as a teacher, as a principal, as a superintendent, and that you bring that experience to the Department of Education now, and so well qualified for the role that you have right now. And we're appreciative of the work that you've done with us and will continue to do with us as we approach the end of session. So thank you for being with us today and for your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Next up, Matt Schaefer, Policy Director of Ed Allies.
It's about who emails first.
Please Chair Pryor, introduce yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer, and I'm the Policy Director at Ed Allies. We advocate for policies that support students. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on the DE Amendment to House File 3782. We're thrilled to see the inclusion of Rep. Clarity's House File 1220, which adds important measures within a pre-existing area of the world's best workforce and just at the high school level. This language proposes to measure what research tells us really matters for college and career readiness, whether a student is on track to graduate after ninth grade, and what access to rigorous coursework of all kinds looks like for kids. Prioritizing these factors will help ensure that an appropriate and focused level of attention is being given to these evidence-based, equity-centered barometers of college and career readiness. I also want to share a support for the inclusion of the Language Access Plan in a district's long-term strategic plan. On the whole, our system of education is massively underserving multilingual learners. This proposal is the bare minimum accountability that multilingual kids and families are owed by our state. Thank you, Chair Pryor, for including these proposals in your omnibus bill. We are concerned with MDE's proposal to push back public reporting on the MCAs to December. The current language that the commissioner must publicly report this information to our state's report card website by September 1st has been in law since 2004. Minnesota has managed to meet this requirement rooted in basic transparency and accountability for two decades, and we don't see a good reason to abandon it now. Finally, licensure. We are grateful to see some amending language to the Tier 1 and Tier 2 special education language. Thank you, Chair Pryor, for being willing to provide further clarity about how teachers taking a non-traditional route to the classroom get the mentorship and PD they are already required to receive. We still have questions about what it means to, quote, demonstrate satisfactory progress toward professional licensure and encourage legislators to work with stakeholders to spell that out in statute. To reiterate, the amended language here is a meaningful step in the right direction. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pryor and committee staff, for the work you've led this session. You routinely prioritize hearing proposals rooted in research and centered on children. And thank you, Chair, for being willing to consider feedback today. Thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Next up, we have Caitlin Snyder from Education Minnesota.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder. I represent Education Minnesota today. I just wanted to thank the committee for their work throughout session to craft the policy bill that's in front of you. There's a couple of pieces I wanted to highlight that we're incredibly strongly supportive of, a couple places we've got questions, and a couple places where I think the language could be stronger. This fall, the only thing I was hearing about from members was cell phones, cell phone use in school. So I wanted to commend Representative Feist for her work on the cell phone policy. Since I'm talking about her, I'll also talk about the great work she did with the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools on the some of the conflict of interest language there, making sure that the teacher on the school board is a teacher and not serving in some other capacity. These are really great changes. I don't know that they've been issues in Minnesota necessarily, but they can prevent some of the issues that we've seen in other states. We believe the committee landed at a good spot on the four-day school weeks. I will make a plug again for including bargaining in that language. We are strongly in support of the language that was brought forward to allow the developmentally appropriate physical education assessment to be a standalone assessment. For some of our special education teachers, this is going to save dozens of hours of paperwork for them. We also support the inclusion of national board certified teacher in tier four. For folks who don't know, this is similar to a doctor residency model. You spend 5 years working on this portfolio. We are very strongly intrigued, I will say, on track for graduation. We'd like to get a little bit more information about what this means, but there does seem to be some research that this is a better way to measure if our kids, ninth grade course completion, if our kids are on track for graduation. I will note in a related section, 13.23, we are asking schools to report language, to report how many kids are taking the AP and IB tests. From our experience, there are some kids that aren't taking the tests because of the cost. Like, they might take the course, but they don't take the test. So not sure how to thread that needle, but thought I would raise the concern. We have a potential concern about the PSEO recruitment language allowing advertising in school districts that are smaller than 700. There are some smaller communities in greater Minnesota that have been really struggling with this relationship with their local college or university, so something to keep in mind. And then the two places that I think the language could be a little bit stronger is we worked with the Minnesota School Counselors Association on the recommended duties. The conversation about recommended ratios, I think, was a really great conversation to have. They would still be supportive of including the recommended duties from Representative Berg's bill. And then I would say that the committee could provide further definition of meaningful progress in the Tier 1 and Tier 2 special education language. This will ultimately be decided through rulemaking with PELSBY. That's usually an 18 to 24 month process, so we could save the government a little bit of time by adding some language there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next up, Scott Hrunquist, Executive Director, Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Hrunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts and speaking today on behalf of superintendents and school board members. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few brief remarks about House File 3782, the Omnibus Policy Bill. And thank you also, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to work with you throughout this session and for listening to us and meeting with us and to hear about our concerns and ideas. Madam Chair and members, as we surveyed our members last summer and fall to determine their priorities for the 24th session, two issues rose quickly to the top. One was the need for some supplemental funding to address the historic inflationary cost pressures we are all facing. And the other one was a plea, really, for no new mandates in this new session. As you know, the bill that was approved last year included expansive number of new programs and expectations for our schools. And the very clear message I hear from our members is that they really need some time to successfully implement those new programs and requirements. With that in mind, we appreciate that you are cognizant of that need for some breathing room as you developed your bill and that you did, in fact, keep the new mandates to a minimum. We appreciate that the bill delays the requirement that students complete a course in government and citizenship by 1 year, which will provide a little more breathing room for an effective transition. We're also supportive of the two sections in the special education article allowing districts to conduct an assessment for developmental adapted physical education as a standalone evaluation, and also the establishment of the special education licensure reciprocity working group, which we hope will help address the shortage in that area. While there are a few new requirements related to mental health care and developing a new policy, we greatly appreciate that the authors of those proposals worked with us through the session and really did add some language to provide some flexibility and some time to implement those requirements. One disappointment we have, and this really has to do with what's not in the bill, and we really were hoping that Representative Clardy's bill, House File 3363, would make it. We think that that would create some meaningful student-centered learning opportunities for our high school students and expand opportunities in the area of service learning, project-based learning, internships, community learning partnerships, and more. We hope that maybe there'll be a chance as we move forward this session to still include that opportunity. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you again, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Roger Arneson, Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association.
Afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Roger Arneson, and I represent the elementary principals. I also represent secondary principals. And the high school league as well. And a couple things about the bill, but before I start that, I want to echo the comments that you heard previously. We really have appreciated working with this committee, Madam Chair, and with you and with the staff on this committee. This has been a nice place to come and exchange policy proposals. It's one of the things that doesn't show up in this bill is some of the work that the committee did. And as this affects school principals, I would say probably the most significant legislation that will affect school principals in the upcoming year is the passage of the school liaison officer bill. That was a very, very big deal to us, and you know that that came through your committee here, and I think everyone, particularly Representative Frazier, but everyone on this committee shares part credit for putting that bill together and passing it. When we sign up for these bills, you know, it's always kind of important to try to think about what you're going to say. There isn't an awful lot to say about this. There's some things in here that we're going to do good things with. We're going to do something, I think, very, very positive with the cell phone language that's been adopted in the bill. The principals were very happy to step up and say we'll share best practices, and I think that's actually going to change some things for students that happen in their lives in the upcoming year. A lot of the language is fashioned in a way that I think we can work through it. We're very appreciative that the school newspaper bill has the exception in it for the yearbooks. That does give some school principals a bit of heartburn. But that's to be expected with change as we move through this. So we think this was a very good year. I want to say one of the things that isn't here, and this is a lot in consistent with what Mr. Hrunquist said in terms of new mandates that were coming out this year. We're still in the school year that followed last year's session. We are still working through the stuff that you passed last year. We're getting used to it. We're getting smarter about it. We know some things, and we've talked to the commissioner about this extensively, that maybe we don't think work very well, and we're going to come back to you next time when we think enough time has elapsed and we've had enough best experience with this that we can say maybe this should be tweaked, maybe this could be enhanced. We specifically avoided doing that this year. We didn't come and seek any changes in all of the school discipline changes, for example, that you did last year, because we want to find out how that's working. And we're going to continue to do that, and then we'll talk to this committee about it in the future. And I think the input that we may have on that will be better as a result of our experience. At least that's what we think. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And finally, Denise Dietrich, Minnesota School Board Association. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Pryor, and members of the committee. I like being a finally. Thank you. She said, and finally. So my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association and the state's 331 school boards and superintendents. So we appreciate the opportunity to testify here today on House File 3782 as amended by the DE2. So first of all, we want to begin today by thanking you for including the evaluation of the district's application to move to a four-day school week plan. We thank you for hearing the testimony of our district superintendents and school boards about the importance of a flexible learning year program. In addition, we are grateful for delaying the implementation of the government and citizenship course by 1 year. Our districts sincerely appreciate the extra time. As an organization that brought several bills to reduce special education paperwork forward a few years back, we were very pleased to see that the school district may conduct an assessment for developmental adapted physical education as a standalone evaluation. We hope this is a starting point for more work to be done in this area. As we look forward, to participating in the Special Education Licensure Reciprocity Working Group. We also want to thank the committee for including the telemental health provision. We really appreciate Representative Norris bringing this bill forward and working so closely with us so that it can be implemented in a way that works for both students and for administration. So then in regarding to the World's Best Workforce section of the bill, Article 2, Section 6, MSBA and along with other organizations have long advocated not to add to the World's Best Workforce reporting requirements, and we continue to stand by that request. To that point, we do have concerns about the new on track for graduation definition and the additional performance measures reporting required in Article 2, Section 5 and 6. We believe much of this data is available through the department and could be reported out that way or in a different way. In some cases, the reporting out by subgroups may inadvertently identify a student or a small group of students, and we are hoping to continue those discussions to find another solution for this reporting that better meets the desired outcomes. So similarly, we very much understand and want to ensure that non-English speaking families have access to interpreters and other vital school information. We have had good conversations with the department and are anticipating an amendment to place the language access plan in the parent student handbook, which is accessible to all students and all parents and is the natural place for families to look first. And another thought on that piece is that the effective date for that is July 1, 2024, and that could be a tight timeline for implementation. So finally, before I close, I would just like to also share some of the sentiment that was raised by Scott Krunquist, and that is there is a disappointment in the bill, and that is that the instructional hours provision was not included in the policy bill. We understand that is a complex change, but on the other hand, it's really quite simple, and there are some times where it is you just it is important to pass the policy and let the process follow and work out the policy. And we think that that is one of those instances. So finally, we would just like to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing us and hearing our request to minimize the amount of new mandates. Our boards are very appreciative of that, and we will definitely be sharing that message with them in the weeks to come. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, all that have so carefully followed the committee and its work, and for your testimony today. We do appreciate and always do appreciate the contributions that we have of the various stakeholder groups. So at this point, I will turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Hill, and we can continue with the discussion of the bill.
As Chair Pryor gets set, we're going to turn it over first to her for any remarks on the bill, and then we'll have our member discussion. So with that, when you're ready, Chair Pryor, any remarks on the bill?
All right.
Oh, I like that. Cooking for Easter, that's what we're doing. Well, thank you, Vice Chair Hill, and thank you, members, and the first comment that I wanted to make is it ends up being that one person's name is on this bill, and it happens to be mine. And I am honored that it is my name, because I know that this bill reflects so much work from so many people that are here in this room, but also all over the state. And it's good work. There's a lot of good things in this bill, and that will make a difference for students going forward. So again, to repeat that, it's the way things done. There's one person whose name is attributed to it as the author of the bill, but we know that the work is so much bigger and broader than that. And the good thing about it is those contributions that have been made, and that's the best thing about this bill. So thank you, and I will probably say that again before we're all done, but at least I have this moment to say it, and that we're not under a pressure of time. So that's where I want to start. I want to maybe highlight some of the things that that I think about when I page through this and remember the work that was done. And I do want to start, I was going to start with one thing, and I'm going to start with the other thing. I'm going to start with the paperwork reduction. And again, this is an excellent example of work that was done by a group outside of who we are and what we're doing right now, outside of the work that I actually contributed to directly, other than to initiate the process. But it was some good work, people coming together, and there's a significant improvement in the amount of paperwork that our special education teachers are going to be doing. But we're not losing anything in terms of the service and the educational value of our students with the needs that are going to be identified. So this is a net gain for our state, and it shows that we can make progress even on these very difficult issues. I also want to talk about the cell phone policy and appreciate how people came together and in good faith, because people recognize that this is a problem that we're having right now and that we need to take action as a state. So there's maybe some schools out there where it's not as much of a problem as other schools. So that's great. Get the cell phone policy out there and prevent the problems that could be happening in the future. And knowing that the principals are going to be working on this together, sharing best practices, sharing ideas, and that all of our students can benefit because we do this at the state level is something that we can all take pride in. I want to talk a little bit about the four-day school week. And just to share with everybody that this is an excellent example of a member who is in the minority but knew that he had something important to share with this committee and an idea that was important to share and be brought forward as an idea for states to, for different school districts around to look at. And so Representative Baker, he had dropped the bill right at the beginning of the, very close to one of the first bills that were out there. And he kept coming up to me when he saw me after our Human Services Committee. He said, well, can I get a hearing on the bill? Can I get a hearing on the bill? I just want to hear feedback. You know, if there's problems with it, I want to hear about it. And, you know, we can work with it. We can get a policy going forward. So, I mean, he was, you know, periodically would ask me, not just after every meeting. But when he came forward, it was always to be constructive. He was persistent, but he was always constructive in how he came forward. And so I said, well, yes, we can do a hearing on the bill. And then he reminded me over the interim, so you said you're going to do a hearing on the bill. And I said, yep, we're going to do a hearing on the bill. That gave me time to reach out to different stakeholders and start getting feedback. And we did start the discussion and start thinking about it. And I think we have a step forward. Four-day school week is not for every school in the district. Four-day school week is unlikely to save money for a school district. But a four-day school day, a four-day school week might be good for students, less time on the bus, more times for teachers to find training. That benefits the students. There may be some advantages to the four-day school week for particular school districts that will really make a difference for students. And so we have a policy that MDE has agreed to that they can work with, but we don't lose that state accountability. And that was the part that we did preserve. And I think that's the part, you know, as we launch this, as becomes more familiar and more of an option, it could be that there's less, you know, less oversight for it, but we're still kind of at the beginning. And we want to make sure that it's done right for school districts so that those families that are most, could be most disadvantaged by something like this, that we know that they're being reached out to and they're being accounted for it. And that's what we always have to keep in mind, is not just the majority of students it's good for, but to make sure that the students that are most at risk, most at need, that we really have to look out for it as a state, that they're being accounted for. And so I think we landed in a good place with that. Very happy about that. And I give all the credit to Representative Baker. I think we did good well on mental health, and that is something that this committee, as well as the other education committee, has heard about so much over the years. It's a step forward, and we really care. And what's that number, Representative Keeler? 988? Yeah. Yes. I don't say it often enough. 988. Students, everybody needs to remember that. All right. And then finally, there's work here about reporting. You know, maybe we can still consider amendments to make sure that we're getting the right, the amount of the data that we're getting when we're getting it. But when we sat down and worked on this bill, what we were thinking about is when is it most useful for us as a legislature to get the data and to get it for the whole year, not just partial data. So that's what we were looking for. And also, what do we think we need to know to make good decisions and policy decisions? So we keep talking about data, we keep talking about reporting, and we also know that our responsibility as a committee and as legislator is to pay attention to the data. It doesn't give us all the answers, but it gives us some information that we can base our choices on, and then we make policy. So that's some of the things in the bill. It's a lot of good work from a lot of good people that really, really created this. And it still needs to be looked at and discussed, criticized, critiqued. We can still accept feedback. We can still think about changes. We still appreciate your discussion. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. We'll now open it up for member discussion. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair Hill. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank Chair Pryor because it is our last meeting and
not quite
or almost right. But while we're talking about the discussion, because you mentioned just you know the fact that so much work from so many people went into the bill, and I wanted to acknowledge how humble you are. But you worked really hard, and I know this is you know you're leaving us after this year, and so I want to just thank you for shepherding us together and leading the work and putting together a very good policy bill. So thank you.
Representative Joaquin.
I want to echo that. It's going to be hard to lose a partner in justice like you've been in all the work that you've done and we've all done in this room together. And also want to thank all the advocates and the organizations in the audience. It really has been a collaborative year of looking at language and coming to the table. And we may disagree, but then we try to find either a way to make a pathway forward or just also agree to disagree. Last year, we did a lot. We did a lot of investing, but we did a lot of policy, too, because both had been underserved for decades, and it was starting to show up in our schools. So along with money comes, well, some people call it mandates. I like to call it accountability for taxpayer dollars, and we're still having that discussion, and we'll continue to have that discussion moving on. But I'm really going to miss you being here to have that discussion, so thank you.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair Hill. I do want to say more than just thanks, but also thanks. One of the things I've learned being on your committee as a chair is how powerful it can be to really work with stakeholders and our agencies to kind of come to a solution to address some issues. So learning from you in that way has been really valuable. I do just want to highlight, I know in my time long before being here, we've always looked at ways to reduce special education paperwork, and a large chunk of that comes from the feds. It's not really a state level thing, and I think we found a really strategic move, like some of the testifiers said, to eliminate some of that paperwork, which actually gives our teachers the ability to just do what they love to do and what we all know that they're really good at. And so I like that approach. I do like the Norris bill. I think creating space for individuals to access their mental health is really important, because we know often those appointments are every other week ongoing, and that can really attest to like some of our attendance issues that we have, leading to, I know that my attendance bill is not in here, and I just need to make a public statement, that we are really working on a bipartisan effort to approach that. I know we're not really addressing attendance in this bill, but knowing that we're deeply moving forward on that mission to try to address attendance, chronic absenteeism. But the one kind of flag I do want to acknowledge that some of the after school programs have said is that because in the bill, we're doing on-site opportunities, like if you have an hour-long mental health appointment and it overlaps between what would be after school and then maybe an after school program, I'm just interested what the stakeholders are, how that would look in practice, just because that's the one question that's coming to me. How would we address that, or how would that play out in practice? I know every school kind of has their own opportunity, but if we could chat about that just briefly.
Or in the future.
No, like right now, because I do think that because it's a public question on that overlap of time, if you have an hour after school and it transitions from your public school staff to like an after school staff, that bridge is concerning for some implementation practice.
Representative Pryor.
And I think that is one of the questions that leaving open in the actual wording of the statute, knowing that that needs to be worked out at the district level and the school level for what that policy is, and especially, like you said, the overlap, because you're right, there's different programming, different people, different adults that are responsible, and it could be that we need to, before the end, have something specific that addresses that changing of basically responsibility for the students in the building, and that which is and it's an excellent question. So we can go back to Representative Norris that did such an excellent job so far, and put that one more question to him and our stakeholders for what would be the best solution for that. And there is time for an additional amendment before we reach the floor.
Any follow-up, Representative Keeler?
No. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, bringing that issue.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Pryor. It's just
publicly, I'd like to just thank you for your leadership of the committee, but also just your service to your community. And I think any of us that that sign up for any type of job, of public job, you should be recognized publicly. So thank you for your service. I would echo many of the things that were talked about, the paperwork reduction. Like, I think about the evaluation process and the amount of paperwork that a special ed teacher has to do. So anything that we can do to lessen that burden, and I think Representative Keeler said it well, that the teacher is actually working with kids instead of doing paperwork, like that should always be our goal. So I would applaud the step we took, but I would just encourage us as the committee as we're moving forward, what can we do to reduce paperwork so that they are doing the work of working with kids? Because, you know, we have to remember that those students that are receiving special ed services, they have an identified disability, and if we can intervene, then we can fill some of those gaps so that those students can take other classes and have other opportunities. So I would also echo what Representative Keeler talked about from attendance. This is a significant issue, and I would love to have further conversation about how we can address chronic absenteeism, attendance, and I think there were some good ideas discussed, and look forward to that. I do have one question specifically around the reporting, the public reporting. It's on line 22.3, and it starts striking the September 1st reporting deadline, moving that back to December 1st. And whether it's Chair Pryor or the department, I just want to understand the why behind that. I don't remember the why in our discussions about this earlier. So why are we moving that deadline back?
Chair Pryor.
We will not have to rely on my memory, but we'll bring back. And as we get set up for answering that particular question, I'd also like to make a comment on the absenteeism and, you know, the bill that we did here in the committee on that moved on to education finance. And that's why what I want to remind this committee is that the bill is live. I mean, something that can still be worked on and acted on and contributed to, because it is with education finance right now. And so we actually look forward to hearing more from that particular bill, even though it's not currently part of the language that we have right now.
Ms. Arriola.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baikberg, happy to speak more to this provision. So the reporting requirements that we are asked, Megan Arriola, Legislative Coordinator, Department of Education. The reporting requirements that we are asking to move out are reporting requirements for the department. So the school districts, the teachers, the administrators, the folks that put their work into responding to the results of these assessments have this information by well before this time. What MDE has to do is collect all of that information, do our own editing, not necessarily auditing, but following up with our districts to make sure we have the full picture or correct any mistakes that we might have seen. And that happening at the same time as September 1st through October in a school, I don't have to tell you, Representative Baikberg, there's a lot going on during that time. So trying to answer questions from the department about a missing period in one place or an off percentage that we have, it's a lot for our administrators. So by pushing this out to December, it gives them more time to respond to our questions without having it be anything that puts them out of compliance, anything that would put us out of compliance with our reporting. So what we have to post is the statewide picture. The districts have this information well before this time, and we anticipate being able to beat this December 1st deadline. It is really meant as a breathing room for our administrators.
Follow up, Mr. Baikberg, or Representative Baikberg?
Yeah, and I'm gonna just kind of just get really kind of nuts and bolts. So student takes the MCA math assessment. Teacher knows the result instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Kid hits submit, they get the score. When is the school able to communicate to families about what that score is?
Ms. Arriola.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baikberg, That is a very good question that I would like to take back to our staff to be sure about. I do know that until the data is public from the state, it is considered non-public education data. So in terms of the district releasing information about specific students, they would have to follow the applicable laws about release of non-public education data until a certain point. But I do want to double check my response there.
Representative Bakebrook.
So, and just to kind of give you a practical perspective, we're building our master schedule for next year. We've done registration. Like, all of that is happening. So a student that is not proficient on the MCAs and then our other data points, so we don't just look at MCAs, but we look at multiple data points, we would schedule them into intervention classes. Mm-hmm. So we need to be able to communicate to families, and if we push this back, that communication piece to families, we're halfway through the school year. So there just may be some issues with that.
Any response, Ms. Ariel?
I'm happy to take the question back to staff, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other member discussion? Lee Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I first want to say that. I really appreciate the kind and respectful discussions that we had amongst all of us. I think we've been a good team. You know, we can even agree to disagree. But one thing I know we can all agree upon is we want our students to succeed and thrive. So thank you for that and for the good atmosphere here. I'll just touch on a few things in the bill and some that I think are good components of the bill. Just starting with the a small thing, but I think important, tribal spiritual and cultural instruction, cultural observances allowed. I think that's good language. I'm wondering, though, to me, we should expand that to all religious and cultural practices and observances. I think that's something that should be considered, but I do think that's a good component. One thing that I had a teacher come to me last year on a concern with a PSEO student who had dropped out of their PSEO class and the district didn't know. She brought that concern to me, so I was really happy to see that come forward in this committee. I think that's a great component to have the school districts notified as soon as a student withdraws or is absent for a significant length of time. That's important just to keep track of these young students. So a good component. And then the special education, those key provisions there to help with the paperwork, the adaptive PE assessment. I think those things just are common sense and make good sense to have in here, so thank you for that. And having the licensure reciprocity working group, that'll be a good step as well. So just a few concerns, and Rep. Bakeberg echoes some of my concerns with the testing changes in this bill, and especially that date. I think, you know, we have to remember that these test scores and test results are not just for the schools and the teachers and the Department of Ed. They're for the parents and the public. And I had to actually count on my fingers. I figured, okay, if schools usually give that assessment in March, April, or May, most likely. So I picked April and count forward to December. That's 8 months. 8 months before it's revealed publicly what our test scores are for Minnesota, that's too long. That really starts pushing that test to be meaningless. And it's a very meaningful test, but we shouldn't be taking away from it like that. So that does concern me, as well as a little bit of other language in that area. And then the changes to Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses. I understand the federal government issues, but we went beyond the federal government issues. And that does concern me because those tiers were put in place to help more teachers get into the teaching field and be able to teach. And I believe that'll take away from that. I'm wondering, I do have a question, Mr. Chair, if I could. The aid withholding from charter schools with the is it called procurement or whatever that the state can pull back funds. Does similar authority exist for school districts for that, or is that just charter schools? And I'm sorry, I don't have a reference number for that.
We can go to research on that, Mr.
Strombo. Read my mind again, Mr. Strombo.
Representative Bennett, we did have that discussion.
Did you have that discussion?
We were putting together the bill, and so I think it's fairly tough.
So he doesn't have to read my mind then. That's good. That'd be scary.
Mr. Strombo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, there are three provisions related to school districts. And, let me back up a second. The provision related to school district withholding or reducing state aid has a component that says any violation of a statutory provision. So there are a whole number. There are seven items listed. One of those is a violation of something that's specifically prohibited in statute. Then, in my time here, by the way, to my knowledge, no school district has been subject to a withholding or a reduction in their state aid for a violation of those procedures. Now, whether there's been some jawboning back and forth between the department and an individual district or not, on we're going to do this if you don't comply, that may well be the case. But I'm not aware of a district actually losing state aid under the state aid reduction provision in 127A42. There are, in terms of the specific policies, there are three provisions that guide school district, amongst others, that mainly guide school district procurements. They comply with the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law that has dollar values for when things need to be bid, and the school district contracting statute. And they're also subject to a provision that has a bit of an archaic title called Dealing in School Supplies. And that provision says that there are certain kinds of relationships that can't occur between a board member of the district and the school, essentially for buying and selling, or for buying school supplies, basically. And a very broad definition of things would fall under that. So there are limitations on districts that are subject to the aid withholding. But the language that's in the bill, as I understand it, speaks also to the violation of the charter school board policies, including its procurement policy. And so depending on how they designed that policy, it may well be, and I think in many cases would be, tighter than the statutory limits that govern the contracting provisions. So I think they're not 100% analogous.
Lee Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. You read my mind really well. So I do think and would encourage that this would, it really shouldn't be the same. I mean, it's different, I'm sorry. And charter schools should be, in that area, held to the same standards, not more or less than a regular school district, so I would encourage that. And then just lastly, I was really hoping we would see more innovation and reform focused on student academics in this, and I know the READ Act will be in Ed Finance. But even in other areas, we heard some other good bills in here, and so I wish more of those would have been in, but I also understand as a chair you need to weigh all kinds of different factors. So again, thank you for just the great working relationship. Appreciate that, and appreciate all of your hard work.
Any other member discussion before we send it back to Chair Pryor for some closing remarks? Chair Pryor.
Well, thank you. And first, I do want to comment on your closing comments and the question on the innovation that we saw in particularly the bill about we know the bill we're talking about. There are things that we heard because they were interesting, and that they're things that we should follow up on. But that we collectively came to the decision that we weren't quite ready to move forward with it as it was. But that we hope that hearing the bill was encouragement to pursue it until we have language that really works to foster the kind of innovation that we want to see, and that it includes enough discussion about who the people that and the different groups that will be impacted by that kind of innovation, and we can really see how it plays out. And that we also, one of the questions I keep coming back to is, you know, what is our legislative role in that, that facilitates the innovation, but that we don't create unintended consequences when we pass something like that. So the reason it was
that's some of those things are not in here right now is not because it doesn't seem to be a worthwhile idea, but that it seemed to be an idea that was not quite ready yet to be included. All right, so that was, appreciate that comment and the discussion that we had and the procurement one, which was also something that we kind of chewed through and were concerned about. But I think that we landed in a good place on that one. All right, so that's good. There will be amendments tomorrow. One of the amendments will be one of those author's technical amendments, just continuing to get the language all in place that's working correctly. So that will be probably a longer amendment, and we appreciate our nonpartisans continued work on that. And that, yeah, as things come up tomorrow, we can still have time for discussion, and then we will be moving the bill on. And we'll be saying our last goodbyes as a committee. But that's tomorrow, and the real goodbyes are tonight. So thank you all for your work.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. And before I move us towards adjournment, I do want to also thank Chair Pryor. It's been a pleasure. It's been a valuable education to work in proximity to your grace and expertise. And so I want to thank you for your leadership. And through that experience, it was also wonderful and a pleasure to work closely with Lead Bennett and Mr. Withers on a weekly basis. I really appreciate that opportunity, and thank you for your dedication. With that, we will be gathering once again tomorrow afternoon. With our business being completed here, this meeting's adjourned.